For those that don't know already, I'm Ephraim Becker, and I have a counseling practice in Yerushalayim, and I used to be a rabbi, so I like talking like this. It's nice to stand up and talk. Generally speaking, when I'm in my office, I have to listen. It's nice every once in a while. Of course, rabbis have withdrawal symptoms. So, since I haven't spoken for many years, don't check your watch. Check your calendar. This reminds me that there was a fellow who had a Goyisha friend who came with him to Shul. So, with everything that went on, so this guy, what's the significance of that? What's the meaning of that? What is that about? What's that? Everything that happened with it. Anybody walked up, walked down, walked here, walked there, went to the Ark, went to anything that happened at all. So what's the meaning of that? What's the significance of that? So after they put the Sefer Torah back in, so the rabbi got up to speak, and he took off his watch, and he put his watch down in front of him. And the guy said, what's the meaning of that? He said, absolutely nothing. I'd like to talk about Mishloach Manos. The simple halachos of Mishloach Manos, most are familiar with, that we are supposed to enhance somebody else's Purim Suda. We're supposed to give another person something that will enhance their Purim Suda. In fact, two things that will enhance their Purim Suda that are ready to eat. Now it's running again. Question of why. Why do we give Mishloach Manos? So the simple answers, I think, are to be found in Sefer Todah. I'll give you some of the simple answers. One nice answer that I heard is that, from the Sefer Todah, that we're supposed to feel gratitude to one another. The way I would picture that is if Mashiach came right now. Just now we heard the Mashiach came. How many of us would think that we did it? And how many of us would look to thank somebody else who perhaps did something that brought Mashiach? In other words, if there was a Yeshua, how many of us would ascribe that Yeshua to ourselves? And how many would say, you know what, I don't think it was me. I want to thank you. For whatever you did, for whatever you contributed, I want to thank you. So I thought it was a lovely explanation for Mishloach Manos. But the Sefer HaTodah also mentions a Medrash. There's a Medrash at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. And the Medrash makes reference to a Pasuk in Yeshayahu. For those who are not familiar, the Medrash often understands a Pasuk differently than the Pasuk is to be understood when the Pasuk appears in its context. The Medrash does that to teach us, not necessarily to tell us what it means in its context. So that's an important thing. So we're going to be discussing a Pasuk based on the Medrash. It's not the way the Pasuk appears or means in its context. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Perek Nun Zayin, Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Pasuk says, B'za'akech yatziluch kibbutzaych. Simple little words that roll off your tongue. B'za'akech would seem as though the pasuk is referring to calling out, ze'aka, to calling out, b'za'akech, when you call out, yatzilech kibutzayich, your gatherings will save you. That's what's going to save you. When you call out, it's your gatherings that will save you. That seems to be the way the Medrash, at first blush, the way the Medrash is understanding the pasuk. And the Medrash expounds on that pasuk, Tani, we're taught, it's Brisa, Kinuso vikinus bonov hitzilo miad Esav. Yaakov's gathering and the gathering of his sons saved him from Esav. Kinuso vikinus bonov, his gathering and the gathering of his sons. I don't know what it means for one person to gather. Kinuso implies that he first gathered himself, and the gathering of his sons, I got that, they gathered. That's what saved them from the hands of Esav. The Medrash then goes on and makes reference to the fact that the rest of the pasuk refers to what is going to happen to Esav, and that ultimately Yaakov will inherit Eretz Yisrael. But the Medrash focuses on this expression, Kinuso v'kinus bonov hitzilo miyad Esav. The gathering of Yaakov and the gathering of his son saved him from Esav. And that is b'za'akech yatziluch kibutzayich. That's the idea that when you call out, your gatherings will save you. So there's something about this gathering, and the Sefer HaTodah puts it in sort of simple terms, and that is, whenever the Jews are in trouble, the way to deal with the trouble is Ahava and Achva in Klal Yisrael. The way to deal with trouble is unity. When Klal Yisrael is unified, that is our bulwark against our enemies. And so, b'za'akech, when you call out, Yatziluch kibutzayach. What will save you is your gathering. And so the Mishloach Manos would be, according to that explanation, a device or a vehicle for enhancing the gathering of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael would be on the same page. Okay? So far, so good? Now, that's the easy part. The Beis HaLevi, the famous elder statesman of the Soloveitchik dynasty, the Beis HaLevi has a fascinating explanation for this Medrash, which I think that if we understand it well, will allow us to have a much deeper insight into Mishloach Manos. He says, when a battle is to be fought, a physical battle, you're basically looking at numbers. The more soldiers, the higher the chances of winning. Even if you're going to use technologies, essentially all technologies are measured in terms of numbers. How many soldiers does a tank represent? How many soldiers does a plane represent? It's all about numbers. Why is it about numbers? Because with the large numbers, you can poke holes in the enemy lines. And eventually, if you've poked enough holes in the enemy lines, then the lines fall. And so you need to amass a large army, and the larger the army, the better the chances of success, eventually to the point where numbers are almost the determinant. What would happen, however, if you amassed a very large army? Almost sounds like an ethnic joke, but what if you amassed a very large army and you had them all gather in one place and all shoot at one place? Sounds a little bit like an ethnic joke, right? Well, you got this huge, large army, and you gather them, instead of spreading them along the front, so that they could poke holes in every point along the enemy line, you gathered them all into one place and told them all to shoot at the same spot. What you would effectively have done would be throw away the advantage of the numbers. You would have thrown away the advantage of numbers because the only way the battle can be won is if the soldiers don't stand in one place. They have to be all over the front, and they can't be firing at one target. They have to be firing at hundreds of different targets along the front. So that's the way a physical battle is fought. It's the only way that it can be won. He says, and the battles of Klal Yisrael exactly the opposite. In the battle of Klal Yisrael, we gather everybody together in one place, and all of their efforts are aimed in one spot, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, as they turn their tefillos to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he understands bezaakech in the pasuk not to mean zeaka as in calling out, but as in vayazek sisra et ha'am, the language of calling up the troops. When you call up the troops, yatziluch kibutzayach, what's going to save you is that you gather all the soldiers into one place and you have them all shoot in the same direction. All of them towards the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's b'za'akech yatziluch kibutzayach. And he says that's the understanding that the Medrash is referring to when it says kinuso v'kinus bonav hitzilo miyad Esav. That the advantage that they got to be able to conquer Esav was their gathering. What was the gathering? The gathering was that they understood that they all had to stand in one place and they all had to fire their attention, all had to be in one direction. So far, that's the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi explains that's why, according to the Sifrei HaMusar, before a person davens, and you'll actually see it printed in many Sidurim, that a person should have intent, should be mechavein when they begin to daven. They should be mechavein to v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. You see it actually printed in some Sidurim. It should be mechaven to v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. What does that mean, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha? Yes, love your neighbor as yourself. What does that mean functionally? What does that mean practically? What that means practically, according to the Ramban, is that you should be able to give a bracha to another person without limit. That's what it means functionally. That is, I wish you a good parnasa, but there are many people who, you know, I wish you a good parnasa, but not better than my parnasa. I wish you a lovely home, but not nicer than my home. I wish you a great shidduch, but not better than my shidduch. I wish you wonderful children, but not better than my children. So the Ramban says that is the mitzvah of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, is to get rid of jealousy. The mitzvah of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, he calls it a midah p'chusa, to get rid of this base inclination that people have to limit their ability to wish somebody else well, and to be able to wish others well without limit. That, the Ramban says, is v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. What does that do? So what that does is actually a fascinating process. That brings Klal Yisrael together. That brings Klal Yisrael together. Jealousy creates the splitting of Klal Yisrael. Each person is pulling for himself. And V'havta L'recha Kamocha creates the energy whereby there is well-wishing. And the practical application of that well-wishing is Mishloach Manos. That's the practical way to do it. Yeah, there's plenty of seats here, guys. Come, Dan. So that's the practical application of wishing somebody else well, is to cause Klal Yisrael to come together. Now let's just think about that for a moment. Let's try to analyze. What does it mean to wish somebody else well? What does that mean? Wishing somebody else well. Even if we were to say, okay, Let's get rid of the jealousy. How do you do that? How do you do that? How does one get rid of the self-centeredness, of the jealousy that causes us or that restricts us in our ability to wish somebody else well and to create this energy of Ve'ahavta L'Re'echa Kamocha? How do you focus on the other person? Well, let's see how you can put where you put his needs. Let's see how where you can put his needs. I'm sorry? If I can be happy with what I have, that'll certainly help. I don't know if anybody's done it, but that'll certainly help. Absolutely, right? But let's think about it in a little bit of an unusual way. I'm going to think about it in an unusual way. I'm going to give you the 2-minute Hitchhiker's Guide to All of Jewish Mysticism. Here goes. You can doze off now for 2 minutes. You want to come back after the mysticism is over? That's fine. Otherwise, here it is. This is the 2-minute Hitchhiker's Guide. If you don't get it now, there's 23 volumes of the Zohar. You know, you can get it there. But this is it. This is the 2-minute Hitchhiker's Guide. We know a piece of information about Hashem that it would seem that we don't need to know. And that is that he's Melo Kol Haaretz Kevodo. Melo Kol Haaretz Kevodo means that there's nothing else other than Hashem. It fills the whole universe. That piece of information would seem to be unnecessary, but it gives rise to a whole world of mysticism. You'll find out in a minute why it is necessary to know that. So he's Melo Kol Haaretz Kevodo. The question then is, well, if I'm not God, how do I come to exist? If he's Melo Kol Haaretz Kevodo, and I'm not God, then how do I come to be? And the answer is the Kabbalistic concept called Tzimtzum. What does that concept imply? That implies a constriction. That means that by his nature, HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills everything. There is nothing that is by his nature, HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills everything. In order to bestow goodness on other, there has to be the possibility of other. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do in order to make the possibility of other? He, so to speak, and I have no idea what these concepts mean, he constricts himself in order to make room for other, in order to be mative to others. In other words, the constriction is a positive choice in order to make room for other, so that there should be an application of his desire to be mativ, to bring goodness to other. Okay? That's, in a nutshell, a piece of information about the world. Lo and behold, we were made in his image. Which means, by our nature, who's the only person who exists? Myself. By our nature, the nature that we were born with, the only person that exists is me. And, in fact, everybody else only exists to the extent that they are a satellite of me. Women are not going to understand this. It's a guy thing. But by their nature, the only person who exists is myself, and others exist only to the extent that I can get benefit from other. That's Melo Kol Haaretz Kevodo. That is, by nature, I am like God. But the key is, I have the capacity to constrict that ego and actually make room for other on other's terms. Because I can actually make room for other not simply because other is good for me, I can make room for other for other's sake. That's what I can do. I have the capacity to constrict myself, to be mitzamtzem, in order to make room for somebody else. When you see people, you know, young teenagers on Ben Yehuda talking to each other, and it looks like they're listening to each other, so you can be certain that the room, that the space that they're making for somebody else is not for the sake of the other. The space that they're making for somebody else is for the self. Sometimes, not here, but out there. Sometimes it even happens between couples, where it appears as though they're making space for each other, but in fact it's all a big manipulation. Out there, that happens. I know, I work in the field. Right? So that sometimes can happen, where it looks as though I'm actually making space for somebody else, but it all has a hook at the end. And the hook at the end is, it's really a manipulation in order to provide for self. But we have the capacity to be godlike, which means that we can actually make room for somebody else. Now, making room for somebody else means creating what I refer to as clean space. That means that if I can constrict myself and make space for you so that I can be mative to you, what would be an indication of how clean the space is? What would you say is an indication of how clean is the space that I've made for others? What would tell me how constricted I am? How well constricted I am?
The degree to which you're taking or giving.
Okay, how would I know? What would my indication be?
A happy spouse.
Okay, that might be a good one. How happy my spouse is would be a good indication. Another indication might be how comfortable I am for the other to forget my existence. So if it ever happened to you, I don't know if it ever happened to you, it has happened to me, that there have been moments when I have forgotten the Ribbono Shalom exists. I've forgotten about the Ribbono Shalom. What does that mean about the cleanliness of the space that he creates for me? What do you learn from the fact that you're able to forget the Ribbono Shalom? That's how clean the space can be. If you want to know what clean space means, try to do a life-saving assistance for somebody and have them forget that you exist. Do it for 10 seconds. Do a life-saving favor for somebody and be totally okay with them forgetting that you exist. We're not even talking about being okay with them then violating your will, you know, with them, you know, then turning around and ignoring you, ignoring your will. You know, forget all that. That's beyond. Just the possibility that I could do a life-saving favor and allow for the possibility that the other forgets that I exist. That's clean space. And we are capable of approaching that degree of cleanliness. We have the capacity, through the span of a lifetime perhaps, we have the capacity to increase our muscle, to build our muscles to the point where the space that we create for somebody else approaches the level of cleanliness of the one that we are made in his image. Now, what typically happens? What typically happens is that I try to create a little bit of space. Let's say that I wake up and I realize that all I've been doing up until now has been occupying all of the space around me. I've been occupying all the space. I woke up, perhaps as an adolescent, began to think about things, think about life, think about purpose, and I come to the realization that I'm basically just using everybody. Nobody exists other than me. I'm using everybody else for my own purposes. I got to get above this. That's not what Hashem put me in the world for. Hashem put me in the world to start making space for other people, and I begin on the road to make space for other people. So I'm trying to help somebody out. I try to help somebody out, and I'm looking to see if they approve of me. And I'm looking to see if they acknowledge and if they're grateful. And I'm looking to see if... Right, so what is that? That's gooey little bits of me that are still sprinkled all over the space that I'm trying to make for them. Does everybody feel that? That's what happens. As we start growing, we have these gooey little bits of me that are all over the space that I try to make for you. That's why, you know, you just have to keep on smiling, nodding, and telling me that, and approving. Why? Because those are gooey little bits of me that are over the space that I'm trying to create for you. So what have we meant to do? Take out the little brush. And through the course of a lifetime, we dust off the space that we make for other to try to create as clean a space as we can. Essentially what the mission is. That's what the God-emulating mission is. You just take out the little brush out of your pocket. When you notice little gooey bits of me kind of sprinkled over the space that I'm trying to make for you, I take this little brush out and try to clean it up. What I'm doing, in effect, is going from raw material, which is Melokalaritz Kavodo, raw material which is all about me, and I'm inching my way towards emulation of my Creator, which is to try to make the space about you. Will I ever get there perfectly? I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. I think, you know, it takes one lifetime, give or take a few minutes. I have no idea how far we can each go. But certainly if we're not working on it, we'll go nowhere. I mean, that's clear. But that's a life mission. The life mission of trying to go from occupying all of the space. You can sometimes feel it in a conversation. If you ever are sensitive to that, you can sometimes feel in a conversation, you can feel how much space each of the speakers are taking up in the conversation. You can sense whether the speaker is giving room to the listener. That means that I'm trying to have in mind, is the person that I'm speaking to understanding what I'm saying? Am I making myself accessible to the person? Am I leaving room for the possibility that the person has a question? Am I open to the possibility that the person disagrees? Can I allow for room for other, or is it all about what I have to say? Sometimes listeners can become very aggressive. Teachers know about that. I'm listening. And you just feel like taking the kid and, like, you know, squeezing out his jugular. And you don't know exactly why it is that you feel like lynching the kid. Like, what is he doing? And the answer is, as a listener, he is occupying all of the space. There is virtually no room left for a speaker when there's a listener who is occupying all of the space. So with these things, it's very, if you're sensitive to this and if you sort of pick up on it, I'm not talking to the women, they always pick up on that. But if you're sensitive to this, you will notice who is and how they are occupying the space in a given conversation. But granting another person space as a speaker, when you're trying to say something, to actually leave room for the listener, is quite remarkable. What that capacity actually comes from our being B'Tselem Elohim. It's a capacity that only we have in the fact that we are like the Ribbono Shel Olam. We can say something, and at the same time that we are saying something, we can be making room for other. No creature can do that. Birds also chirp, but they are not making room for the chirping of the other. They have something to say. Everything that they have to say has on it to whom it may concern. This is my message. I lay my message down to whom it may concern. If it concerns you, because you want to come into my territory, so you should know, you can't. I didn't say it to you. I didn't make any room for you and for your needs. It's all about me. So that is the unique characteristic of becoming the B'Tselem Elohim through the course of a lifetime, of becoming increasingly in the B'Tselem Elohim, is making space for others. Cleaner space. That the other person doesn't have to force themselves into my space. The space is already there. There's an invitation to the space. The Leil HaSeder is an example of an invitation to the space. That's the At Pesach Lo. Of course, said in the feminine. Right. What's that invitation to the space? I want the child to ask a question. How can I help a child ask a question? How do you do that? How are you supposed to help a child ask a question? The answer is, make space. Make space and the child will ask. That's what you do. If you make space for the child's question. How do you make space for a child's question? So I learned from Rav Michal Tversky that the Baal Haggadah teaches us how to do it. To make space for a child's question, you do a few things. One is, you don't teach them anything if they don't have a question. You first make room for the question. If there's no questions, what does the Seder night teach us? That if nobody has any questions, there isn't anything to say. If nobody asks, there's nothing to teach. I remember one year when my big kids were little, they were sitting around the table and nobody was asking any questions. We're all sitting there. My wife makes a beautiful Seder table. There's many things that appear on the table that don't appear any other time in the year, not even the equivalent thereof. So they're all sitting there, starry-eyed, looking at the table. Nobody's saying anything. So in our custom, we wear a kittel. The kittel has a belt, a gartel on the kittel. So I stood in front of them, and I took the end of the gartel, and I stuck it in my ear. I said, are we ready to start now? So one of the kids said, Abba, why is the gartel in your ear? fantastic question. Special night. And that was it. It was like opening up the floodgate. And I don't even know if we went through the Nusach of the Seder. But it was just an opportunity to ask questions. Because you can't teach anything without questions. Without questions, there's nothing to teach. So you have to make room for those questions. To look forward to the questions. Another way that you make room for the questions, says the Haggadah, is that you never give a complete answer. Never fully answer a question. Child asks, why matzah? Why not bread? Why is there no challah on the table? Oh, wonderful question. We were slaves to Paro in Mitzrayim. Stop. What does that do? What does that do when you give a partial answer? It stimulates the next question. It encourages and stimulates the next question. It makes room for questions. What happens when you fully answer a question? What do you do with it?
More space.
No more space. Choke the question. We're all about making space. If you want to teach the next generation, if you want to have a healthy marriage, if you want to have a healthy relationship, it's all about our ability to make space for others. That ability defines us as a Tzelem Elokim. And there's a very simple, practical device for practicing making room for somebody else. It's called Mishloach Manos. A simple, small, practical device. What am I helping somebody else out with? Some lofty spiritual goal? What am I helping them out with? A meal. I want to help their meal. I want to think about their meal. I want to think about their meal and think about what might enhance their meal.
Should we give to our spouse?
I'm sorry?
Should we be giving to our spouse?
Should we give to our spouse? Very interesting. Well, if there's friction in the house, that might be a very good address. Otherwise, you want to perhaps choose somebody that you want to get closer to. You know, bring Klal Yisrael together. But certainly, if there's friction in the house, it sounds like a lovely idea. I'm not sure if you're Yotze, but ownership issues there. But sure. The idea, the concept of creating space in that way, of let me think about what would enhance your meal. That is the fundamental issue of Bizaakech Yatziluch Kibbutzayach. What the Medrash refers to, and what I believe the Beis Halevi is alluding to, is making space. Well, what happens if we are all working on making space? It's a fantastic concept that happens. It's almost a metaphysical concept. If everybody is working on making space, then everybody feels that there's room for them. There's a chazal that talks about a generation, a very, very poor generation. Shisha miskasin betalis ech. Six were able to be covered, needed to be covered, were able to be covered with one talis. They were very poor. They didn't have enough resources for each of them to have their own garment. Say the Balei Musar, how's that possible if it's a talis that was built for one? How is it possible that six were covered by it? And the answer is because each one was trying to cover the other. If anyone would have pulled the talus towards themselves, I need that, then the talus would not have been big enough to cover them all. Once we try to make space for other, there is a unification process that is a startling unification process. The fact that others feel safe enough that there's space for them creates a remarkable unification in Klal Yisrael. And that unification is spelled out in Mishloach Manos. That's where you see this concept of that unification. So what are the factors that cause the unification to fail? Why do we not sometimes make room for somebody else? It doesn't happen. Why do we not sometimes make room for somebody else? So the first answer we gave was because of our nature. The way we were born. In our nature, we were born to be self-centered. We were created to be self-centered, malokal aretz kavodo, so to speak, with the opportunity to constrict. So a person who has not begun the road embarked on the road of trying to make room for other will naturally find themselves self-centered, preoccupied with self. But let's say a person is on the road. What would derail the process? So it seems that there's two basic things that would derail the process. One is privation, suffering, privation, and the other is success. Those are the two things that cause a person to not see others. A person who's in a state of privation and stress, almost a sense of panic, becomes preoccupied with himself, sometimes just because of survival issues, sometimes beyond just survival issues, and the other is success. Success has a fascinating way of causing a person to forget that there are other people in the world. They say that Bali Musar used to report that the difference between a window where you can look out and see others and a mirror where you only see yourself is just a little bit of silver. You get a little bit of silver in the way and the only one you see is yourself. So both privation and success both have the tendency or the capacity to derail us from the process of making room for other. I believe then that it's not a coincidence that the first time we get the instruction about unifying Klal Yisrael is in the Megillah when they're in deep, deep trouble. There's a terrible decree against the Jews. What does Esther tell the people? Via Mordechai, Lech Knos Et Kol HaYehudim. Tell them they have to start keeping each other in mind. They have to unify. They're in trouble. The tendency of times of trouble is that everybody tries to fend for themselves. The message of Esther is Lech Knos Et Kol HaYehudim. Get them all together. It's a dangerous time. They have to remember to keep each other in mind. What happens when they have this incredible success? Incredible success. They're on top of the world. I mean, it's almost unimaginable. We got a little bit of a glimpse of it in America after the Six-Day War. When every door of Congress was open to an Israeli. Every door was open. Everybody wanted to... They were on top of the world. It was an incredible time. Just a little bit of a glimpse of what it must have been like in this entire Persian Empire. The people that yesterday were slated for annihilation are today, the whole 127 countries have bowed at their knees to the Jews. I would imagine the Jews felt pretty good. Perhaps a little bit smug. An enormous success. At the point of that enormous success, Mordechai steps in and says, institutes Mishloach Manos. There's Lech Knosis Kol HaYehudim. When the times are times of distress, and at a time of success, Mishloach Manos. Put somebody else in your head. You're sitting down for the festive meal, that makes very good sense. You want to mark the miracle? That makes very good sense. Of course you should mark the miracle. Miraculous salvation of the Jewish people, of course you should mark it. Now go put something on somebody else's table. The idea that you should take care of the poor, that's lovely. Shouldn't be, celebrating your own success and not in any way making room for the poor. Certainly that makes very good sense. But this is beyond just being benevolent to the poor. This is put somebody else, put your next door neighbor in your head. That's hard to do when you're living in a nice house. To put your neighbor in your head is harder to do when you're living in a nice house. And the nicer the house, the harder it is to put your neighbor in your head. Times of trouble and times of success, we have this capacity. We have this striking capacity to put others on our radar screen and actually think about their welfare, not in terms of how it will shine back on us, but in terms of what it will do and how it will enhance the world of the other. I'm a little bit addicted to telling stories about my grandmother, Olas Shalom. I developed that addiction many, many years ago, but it's always struck me, and it's a story that I've told, and I will probably tell again, if given the opportunity, but it's particularly striking here in times of privation. So they went through Auschwitz, and the Germans did whatever they could to be able to kill Jews without having to use bullets. And one of the devices was they put them into a room, too many people, into too small of a room, and simply blackened out all of the whatever windows were up there, just sealed up the room. And the simple assumption that eventually enough would asphyxiate. They would just die from lack of air. So my mother, she should be well, she sensed that black up there was not all just black, that was a window up there. And she had a plan to make a pyramid of these women, that the girls would all make a pyramid, they would climb up one on top of the other, and they would get up there and break that window and get air into the room. She was very excited about that plan. The difficulty was there was something that needed to be done first. There were women, among them my grandmother, who were up on an upper bunk in the barrack, on an upper bunk. And on that upper bunk, it became virtually impossible to breathe. The heat, of course, from all of these people was rising in the air. It was virtually impossible. So anyone who was up there needed to come down. And my mother reports that in the course of the jostling, there was another girl who was next to her, who was also trying to get her mother down from this upper bunk in this chaotic hell that was this death camp. And my grandmother came down, and in the course of the jostling, this girl's glasses fell off. And my mother says she didn't even pay attention. I mean, who was going to even survive this room? And she launched into telling my grandmother as she came down that those are windows, we can make a pyramid, we're going to get up there, we're going to break the windows. My grandmother said, she can't see without her glasses. Get down on the floor and see if there's anything there that you can pick up and straighten up and give her, because she can't see without her glasses. And my mother, for a brief moment, thought that her mother had lost her mind. How can you be thinking about that now? What about the pyramid? The pyramid can wait. In another moment, there won't be anything to salvage of her glasses. Get down there and try to salvage what you can of her glasses. My mother did. She bent down and she gave the girl what remained of her glasses. My mother says, I have no idea if this girl survived. I didn't know who she was. I don't know who she is. I have no idea if she survived. The message that in no matter what state of privation, lech knos es kol ha-yehudim, there is room, there is always the possibility of making some space for someone else. Perhaps not on the level of my grandmother. I don't know how many people are even capable of imagining her ability to make room for other. But there is space. There is the possibility of making room for another person, even in states of privation. Certainly in states of success, there is room to be able to make room for others. I don't know which one is more difficult. I think it depends on the personality of the person. Some people find it easier when they're in a tough strait to make room for others. Others find it easier when they have wealth. Most people would claim that they'll do a much better job when they have wealth. Not sure if anybody wants to be tested. Summary. The Megillah introduces us to two concepts of unification. There's a unity before, there's a unity after. Lech Knosis Kol HaYehudim comes before, and after we find the Mishloach Manos. We have the opportunity to make space, more particularly we have the capacity to make space. How strong is that capacity? Nobody can tell us. But we know that if we are built in God's image, then the capacity is even to the point of being able to make space so clean that the other could even forget that we're there. Are we expected to always be on that level? I'm not here when nobody's giving out report cards. It's a direction, it's a vector, it's what we're supposed to be working towards. It's from the birth state that we each arrive in, which is that of self-centeredness, to the extent that we can become God-emulating and making space for other. And I believe that if we have that in mind when we approach the Mishloach Manos, one thing that will certainly be eliminated is the Mishloach Manos competitions. That would certainly be eliminated. I want everybody to know about my Mishloach Manos. I don't think that's pretty gooey with pieces of me all over it. I think that would probably go first. But it goes beyond just I need to have me all over this Mishloach Manos. It is I actually have the ability to paint this Mishloach Manos in you, in thinking about you, in thinking perhaps about your children, in thinking about your tastes even, in thinking about what you would enjoy. And as small or as simple as it might be, to be able to feel for a brief moment that I wanted to make space for you, because that's what Chazal instituted in Mishloach Manos. They gave us a practical, hands-on gift for actualizing God emulation in a moment of success. The moment of success where Klal Yisrael is celebrating the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has saved us, that we can be able to tune in. I believe that we're living in times that echo both of these. We're living in times that echo both the need for Lech Kenosis Kol HaYehudim, and we're living also in times of Mishloach Manos. A strange time that we're living in, where side by side there's enormous suffering and illness and needs that are profound, at the same time that Klal Yisrael sits at perhaps at the incredible zenith of success in professional and material ways, of just profound, profound success and profound neediness, literally meshamesh birbuvia, that seems to be going on simultaneously, almost in the same home. And we have the opportunity of Lech Kenosis Kol HaYehudim, and the opportunity of Mishloach Manos. Freilich and Purim.